Podcast of the Cinema.
Starring Alonzo Duralde. That's not me. That's you.
And Dave White, which is not me. That's you.
We're both film critics for The Wrap.
Mm-hmm.
That's a .com.
It is.
And you do Breakfast All Day. Yes. That's another podcast you're on.
Mm-hmm. And Who Shot You?
And Who Shot You? That's another podcast you're on.
Yeah.
And everything in the world is as it should be. Nothing is new or different. Everything is great and wonderful. And let's just talk about going to the movies, going to the picture show, going to out to the cinema.
Being surrounded by strangers in the dark.
That's right.
For that communal sense that you only get at a movie theater.
You put your hands right on those armrests that someone put their feet on.
And like share your popcorn.
With anyone. That's what you should do.
Oh, man. How is everybody? We hope you're well. We're fine.
It's been 2 weeks.
Yes.
Since the last linoleum knife.
Mm-hmm.
There was no linoleum knife last week.
There was not.
Because on...
We're early adopters of...
Well,
things.
I'm going to tell the whole story.
Okay, lay it out.
We'll get to the three films that we have to discuss today.
Yes.
In a bit. On, what day is today? The 15th?
Yeah.
All right, on Wednesday, March 4th,
mm-hmm.
I started to feel weird. Like, I had this little cough and congestion, and I thought... I already had, like, the flu in January. Mm-hmm. Do I need to have a sinus infection now? Because that's kind of what it started to feel like.
Right.
But this was also at the same time as, you know, the rumblings of what was about to start happening.
Yes. So, it was still technically being called a hoax by the White House, I think.
Well, if we're going to be very, very technically specific about it, he did not say that the virus itself was a hoax. He said that...
Soon there would be no cases.
He said that Democrats were pumping it up, and that that was itself a form of a hoax.
I see. Gotcha.
Either way, he did not take it seriously because he's a disgusting garbage person.
Yes.
But let's not talk about that man.
Fair enough.
I don't give a damn about what happens to him.
Let's not.
Should be strung up. I do give a damn about what should be happening to him. Anyway, you took me to urgent care on Friday,
the 6th. Yes.
And the doctor said, sinusitis, you don't have a fever. You have what had become at that point a productive frequent cough.
Yes.
And wheezing, which is just gross. It's like this death rattle. It drives me insane. And massive sinus congestion, painful sinus congestion.
Mm-hmm.
Draining. So it gave me an inhaler and Sudafed, and neither one of them was all that effective.
Efficacious.
I wound up just like drinking NyQuil every night, which is what I'm kind of still doing.
Mm.
But that was 8-9 days ago, and it's now I've turned a corner. I'm feeling better.
Oh, good.
I'm still coughing a lot, but that's what happens. The cough is the last thing to go.
Right.
I can sleep lying down now, which
that was a big move forward.
Fantastic.
Yes.
The first two or three nights, I had to sleep sitting up in this big reading chair that we have in our bedroom. So I'm sure it was cool. It's like if you woke up in the middle of the night and you looked over and you saw a person sitting in the corner, you know.
I did not wake up in the middle of the night.
Yeah. That wouldn't have been terrifying at all.
No. But our wonderful chair that we purchased from former sponsors.
RogerandChris.com.
RogerandChris.com.
Yes.
They make a lovely chair.
A beautiful, comfy armchair for a fat person.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. Then you got yourself like a little cold.
Yeah, about midweek. Monday or Tuesday, I think, I started... coughing and sneezing, and I would go to bed at night and suddenly, like, you know, one half of my sinuses would, like, you know,
yeah,
not be having it,
right,
that sort of thing. So we've already been hiding in this apartment since last Friday,
right?
So
the new protocol is just sort of how we've been living for the past week anyway.
Yeah, so there's something...
And we already work at home.
Yeah.
For the most part, other than going out to screenings, which have all been canceled.
Yeah, or no, or we just... There were a couple I could have gone to this week and opted not to.
Right.
Which are sadly means that we are not talking about those movies this week. I did not get to get out to see The Hunt or Never Rarely Sometimes Always. But yeah, so I was already just like, yeah, I'm not going out. I'm not risking it. You know, like there was supposed to be a Schmodown thing yesterday, and I was like, I'm not feeling up to that. And then they canceled the whole thing anyway because of
right.
everything being canceled, which it should be. So yeah, it's been weird to have just a garden variety cold while the world is freaking out about like this real pandemic that's happening. And on a week where it's raining in Los Angeles, which already adds its own level of, like, you're trapped indoors.
Right.
Because it never rains here. So it's just been a weird week. Incidentally, there will be pauses in the recording of this program for one or both of us to cough.
Or for me to go use a neti pot.
Yes. But we'll spare you that audio. But anyway, we're both mostly better now.
Ish.
Better than we were. A few days ago. Because, yeah, when we're both simultaneously sick, that ain't no fun at all.
No, it's not good. So the way that we will move forward mm-hmm. with this show, because this is a podcast about reviewing the currently released films.
Yeah.
We have three of them today.
Yes.
How you are supposed to go see them is not up to us.
Yeah.
It's very likely that you will, if you ever do want to see these films, that you'll have to stream them.
Yes.
Because as of today, the governor of California just closed all the bars
mm-hmm.
and the restaurants have now been, their capacities have all been cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
Movie
theaters
are still open in Los Angeles.
Yes, but you can't have more than 250 people. So for larger houses, they've just been like blocking off seats that they aren't selling, and they aren't putting people next to each other.
Right.
Like they're socially distancing you whether you want to or not when you buy
right.
your tickets. It's a weird time right now.
I'll tell you, there are only two movie theaters that I can think of that I go to with any regularity.
Uh-huh.
That I would feel comfortable in right now anyway.
Hmm.
The Grove
mm-hmm.
and Lemley's Royal. And the reason is because those seats at those two theaters...
Are not cloth.
Are not cloth. They can be wiped down.
Yes.
If you were to bring your own...
Clorox wipes
with you, for example, or whatever cleaning solution you have,
mm-hmm.
You could wipe down those seats.
You could.
And if I were to go out to a movie theater, I'm not because I'm coughing too much. And I don't want the death stares of every single human being around me.
Indeed.
And furthermore, even though all I have right now is a garden variety sinus infection,
mm-hmm.
for all I know, I've got this thing and it's just dormant in me.
For all anybody knows.
Because there are no tests going on in the United States yet.
Exactly.
Unless you're completely symptomatic and you're in the hospital.
Yeah, you could be perfectly healthy and asymptomatic.
Or you're rich somehow and you manage to get the test. I don't know how that's working. But
who knows?
Rich people seem to be able to get the test.
What we're saying is stay home, please.
Yeah, I would stay home anyway because one of the things I'm noticing happening is that people under 40... particularly people under, like, 35, are all just still out running around.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, I'm young, I'm healthy. If I get it, it's going to be mild, and that's going to be the end of it. Well, that's fine for you. But you come into contact with, you know, how many other people out in the world. And if you've got it, and you don't know it, and you don't know it until 10 days from now, you've passed it on.
Yeah.
So the fact of, if you have the ability... to stay home. If
yes.
your job doesn't require you to go into your job and be at your job,
right.
or they fire you.
If you are a healthcare professional, if you are working at a Costco or a grocery store or a Target or anything right now, and don't have the option of working at home, You are the real heroes.
God bless you.
Y'all are the front line dealing with all kinds of craziness, and you know, we wish you all the best.
But if you can be at home and you don't be at home, what are you even doing?
Yeah, this is not a I have to go to the mall or the terrorists win situation. This is an I have to not go to the mall so that this thing does not, like, inflate like crazy.
Right. We are both very lucky. Our jobs keep us mostly here.
So anyway, in the weeks to come, as there are...
Getting back to the thing.
Right.
Only two theaters I would trust in Los Angeles because of those situations. And I assume eventually they're going to close. I think the theaters, movie theaters are going to close down, I think.
I would think so,
too. I can't imagine them staying open.
Yeah.
And the... And so the problem then becomes, getting back to the original topic.
Yeah, is what are we even talking about here?
We're going to talk about the new releases that are streaming.
Yes, because, you know, they're like just this week, Netflix just dropped Lost Girl. Hulu has Big Time Adolescence coming up on Friday with Pete Davidson and John Cryer. There's a lot, you know, there are films that are day and date that are not pushing their releases back. So, you know, we can talk about those. These are films that you can rent on like iTunes or Amazon or whatever.
We both have a couple of screening links to a couple of upcoming theatrical releases that are probably also day and date. Is that what you were just... Is The Climb? We have The Climb.
I don't know if The Climb is day and date.
But we still have it.
We still have a link to it, and we were...
That's supposed to open next Friday?
The 20th, correct.
Okay, yeah.
So if it doesn't get pushed back and it's going to be opening, we're going to watch that link and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
But,
you know... There will be plenty of movies to be discussed on Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
We just don't know... if they're going to be the kind that you will go out to a movie theater to see.
Sure, assuming that that's even an option.
And then, you know, someday this will be over and we'll all go out back to the picture show again.
Yes, life will resume. But for right now, you know, let's obey the protocols.
Yes, let's.
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 As a treat.
Oh, it ain't no treat.
No, no, it is not.
The grocery store in our neighborhood is like a film. Thunderdome.
The Beyond Thunderdome, right? Yikes.
It's
you've been telling me. I haven't really been since things got really
heavy. Well, you know, we'll talk about this in much more detail on
Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Which is a Patreon show that we do. It's a food podcast.
I have been seeing people have asked on social media, please stop running pictures of empty shelves at stores.
Oh, really? I know. I've seen one. I know. I've seen all of them.
Yeah. It's just causing a panic and people are like freaking out and running out and to get more stuff. Like, let them restock the shelves. It's going to be okay.
You know, I have a little list right now on the back of this envelope of things that I need. I need chicken stock.
Mm-hmm.
I need some onions.
Mm-hmm.
I need some eggs, some cinnamon, milk, butter. It would be nice to just be able to walk down the block to my local grocery store and pick up those items, but I was there 4 days ago. I did not cough once. I had on my gloves, my little plasticky vinyl gloves, which I bought... About 3 weeks ago, I bought a box of them about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because when I heard about this, when I heard about this for the first time a few weeks back, I thought, what's this? And what's going to happen? And what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So I very sort of slowly and methodically began, you know, bolstering our pantry, buying a few extra things, like stuff that would keep, I bought the gloves because I thought, who knows?
Disinfectant wipes.
Bought the Clorox wipes. Like, we quietly and slowly, about 2 to 3 weeks ago, began.
Yeah. At which point, like, our Target was already had the, like, we're out of hand sanitizer and masks signs up.
Because I live in a state of constant worry anyway.
Sure.
The first time I heard about this, I thought, maybe it would be smart. If we need these things to have them. And, you know, I'm not a prepper.
Yeah.
But I'm not a paranoid person either.
Well, you know, back when we used to throw our annual Christmas party, you know, we got into the habit of, like, over the course of the year, storing away things like 12 packs of Coke or, you know, non-perishables that would eventually be used for that,
The Christmas party.
the Christmas party.
Yeah.
And then eventually we wound up having sort of like three categories of extra things we'd pick up at the grocery store that could be stored away for use. And they were known as the three P's.
Right.
And they were pantry, party, and apocalypse.
Correct. You know, it's not that involved,
No.
but I went to the earthquake kit the other day, and there were three cans of food in it.
No, my.
Yeah, because I had been eating this. We had been eating the stuff as it b began
Yeah.
to getting close to
Right.
its expiration date, and I wasn't refilling.
Yeah, see, that's why you got to stop buying that Amy's stuff at Whole Foods and, you know, go right to the SpaghettiOs. Like, that stuff will last forever.
Right, and the Amy's, honestly, that Amy's stuff just doesn't always taste that good anyway.
No.
It's like
More salt, Amy.
make it just be SpaghettiOs. Yeah.
Who are we kidding?
Yeah. Okay. So, movies.
Movies, you say.
You have seen two of them.
Correct.
I have seen one of them.
Yes.
Neither of us have seen
The
the
others.
others.
Yes.
So, going forward, we will both have seen these things because we'll both be at home watching them.
Yes. We'll be able to have a Socratic
But
dialogue.
these were
Just random
these are random
circumstance where it
circumstances.
didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, talk about, it's been out 2 weeks now. Talk about Onward
Okay.
and talk about First Cow. All right, go.
I hate when you do that. Okay, so Onward is the new Pixar movie. And it is set in sort of a kind of parallel magical universe where basically once there were, you know, Pegasuses and dragons filling the sky, and there were, you know, wizards and elves and whatever. And
Sure.
then somebody invents electricity. And apparently they decide that, you know, like engineering is easier than magic. And so everybody sort of abandons the old ways and just turns the world into one that looks like our world, basically, with cars and things.
All
And,
right.
you know, centaurs are now, you know, policemen and
All
stuff.
right.
And so there's, you know, this elf family. Are they elves? I guess they're elves. No, I don't know what they are. Anyway, they have like pointy ears and stuff. And there's two sons. The older son is your basic Hesher, who, like, you know, has a van with a Pegasus on the side of it, and, you know, plays a lot of role-playing games and listens to metal, question mark, quote unquote. It's a
Okay.
Pixar movie. And then the younger brother is your classic, like, you know, cartoon dork. And on.
Got glasses.
No, but he's very shy and unsure of
All
himself
right.
and has to learn things. And so on his 17th, 18th
Do they play
birthday,
you any of this alleged metal?
you know, it's the sort of like PG movie, you know,
Oh,
sort of thing,
okay.
you
So
know.
like that, yes. All
Exactly.
right. So not metal.
Not metal. No, not at all. Anyway, the kid turns whatever age he turns, and there's a present that dead dad has left for the sons in the attic. And it is this magical
His
staff.
corpse.
No, good guess though. It is this magical staff and this spell that will bring him back for 24 hours so they can like have a moment with him. Yes.
That's
Yes.
what this is about?
That's what, oh, we were just
Oh
getting
my
started.
God, no.
Well, so it turns out that the older son, you know, being into like all the role-playing games and stuff, which an issue I have with this movie, we'll put a pin in that one, thinks he can work the spell, but it can't happen. Dorky son does it, but only manages to bring back the dad's lower torso. So you have this animated pair of pants walking
Okay. All
around.
right. So the bottom half of his body, not even his
No,
torso.
the bottom
All
half of
right.
his body. And then the stone breaks, so they have to basically find another magical stone to do the rest of the spell, and they have 24 hours because then the dad will, even the legs will disappear.
All
So
right.
off they go on a very Pixar sort of, you know, quest to find the thing. And there's some funny stuff, like, you know, they have to go to the lair of the Manticore, which is, of course, now this, like, you know, sort of family Chuck E. Cheese type restaurant, and the Manticore is sort of a harried manager. It's voiced by Octavia Spencer.
All right.
And it's basically like, imagine a horrifying mythological creature who is now Regina Hall in Support the Girls.
Explain. I don't understand.
Well, because like the Manticore's lair is this like Chuck E. Cheese restaurant. So she's like, you know, it's this monster, but wearing like, you know, a white button down shirt and glasses and a very managerial type.
Okay, so she's just running a restaurant.
Yes.
Okay, I understand.
Yes. Anyway, so there's like funny ideas kind of scattered throughout, and then, you know, it does build to the sort of big Sako Pixar tearjerker ending, but it's
dead, and he comes back from the.
But it's an ending that is kind of a cheat, and I'm not going to go into why,
because
that would be giving it away. But I was reminded of those like Agatha Christie adaptations where you don't get certain clues until Poirot is telling you how the murder was committed.
Right.
And you're like, oh, wait a minute. Were we supposed to know that all along?
Right.
You know. So it's a bit of a cheat, I think. But still effective. I got a little verklempt anyway. Here's the thing also that bugged me about the movie, though. Okay, so the older brother, who's voiced by Chris Pratt, of course the dorky one is voiced by Tom Holland, because that's just what he does now. He did it in that Pigeons and Spies movie, whatever that was called.
Uh-huh.
The character played by Chris Pratt is into basically what are the old ways of this civilization.
Okay.
But because the old ways of this civilization resemble what we think of as like, you know, Van Art album cover D&D stuff.
Right.
They make him that kind of a character, but actually he should be like a war reenactor history nerd, because all the stuff he's into actually did once exist in this world. Does that make sense?
I guess, yeah.
He's not somebody who's into like fantasy and, you know, like science fiction. He's into actual history. In the world that this movie is set in, the stuff that he's into actually all did once happen.
I see.
So anyway, it's a fine point, but it's one that just got on my nerves the more I thought about it. It's fine. I mean, like, there are laughs along the way. There's some fun performances. Their mom is voiced by Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay.
You know, you'll see it and you'll be like, okay, that was pretty good. It's one of those pretty good Pixar movies. You're not going to walk out being like, what the heck was that? Because, like, you know, it's too sort of studio competent for that. But it's also, I don't think it's going to jump to the top of anybody's list either.
All right. I knew you wrote a piece for
the Wrap. Yes.
About the alleged queer representation in this
film. Yes, yes. There is a traffic cop played by, or voiced by, Lena Waithe, who has one line about having a girlfriend that I genuinely missed during the movie. Like,
I
missed that one line. I came out of the screening
and chewing something very loudly.
I must have been.
Okay.
It was one of these Disney premieres. What they do is they put your phone in this like magnet sealed bag that you can't get to.
Right.
Rather than take your phone away, you get to keep your phone, but you have to hold onto it in this terrible pupa until they release it at the end of the movie.
Okay.
So I get out of the premiere screening, I turn my phone on, and literally like the first thing I see on Twitter is like, oh, wow, the first Pixar representation, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, really? Where? So there was this one line. And of course, we're already hearing that in some markets, that one line is being completely dubbed over.
Right.
Because
it's not enough that you'll blink and miss it.
Exactly.
You have to miss it.
Indeed.
If you're in a country where they don't like us.
Exactly. They can just like, they can bleep right over it. So yes, I wrote this piece for The Wrap. Please go read it. Where I basically talk about how, you know, do your business or get off the pot, Disney. Because we've been down this road so many times with these characters.
Oh,
who
I
have
know.
Like A-line, who can easily be cut out of a film.
That dude or... in the... The dude in the therapy group
yes.
at the Avengers
Endgame.
And he was like, yeah, I went on a date with this guy and blah, 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 blah. Like, and everyone was like, uh-huh, okay. Oh, all right, goodbye. Like, that was the...
Exactly. The high character with the no name who we'll never see again.
Thank you. The very first a gay male character
in the
in the MCU. I'm so grateful.
Exactly. It's like,
for this representation.
It's like either just don't bother, or like do something that actually merits us being impressed by it. Like, make, you know, and look, I hope that Eternals gives us that character. We've been hearing a lot about, there's this gay superhero played by Brian Tyree Henry. He has a husband played by Haz Salman. They're supposed to kiss in it. Like, great. Bring it all. Let's see what happens. But, you know, if you're going to give me one scattered line that I didn't even hear, right, and that no one in Russia is going to hear, then I don't care. You don't get corporate points for that.
When is Disney Plus going to put this film on its site, on its app?
Probably, like, you know, toward the end of the year. What do you think they're going
to
take?
Oh, they need to do it like in the next 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, you know,
everybody who has a major release in theaters right now needs to get it streaming.
Yeah, pronto. Anything could happen right now, because apparently this weekend, for the film's second weekend, it had an unprecedented like 74% drop.
Yeah,
which only happened because no one's going to the movies this weekend. You know, like Pixar movies do not drop that much from first weekend to second weekend, even the ones that like got not the greatest reviews.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised actually if maybe it does pop up early. That Disney Plus did, move up the releases of Frozen 2 and The Rise of Skywalker.
When you say move up,
like they
moved them back.
They,
oh no.
No, they moved them up.
They moved them up to
earlier. They put it on Disney Plus earlier than they were going to.
You said the title. Here's what happened. You said the names of those movies, and I thought, oh, those are future releases. Like, I forgot that they even already existed in theaters, because I forgot that they existed.
Well, Clint Worthington had a great tweet about that. He was like, hey, Disney, put your stuff on Disney Plus so that we can enjoy it at home. Disney moves up the dates of Frozen 2 and The Rise of Skywalker. Everyone, no, not like that.
So, yeah, I'm thinking anything that's in a theater right now, those distributors responsible for putting it out in front of the public, you better find a way to put it in front of the public.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always had a terrible opening because, again, no one's going to the movies. I'm dying to see that movie.
Well, it opened on 4 screens nationwide. It's a platforming, limited release.
But the per-screen average was terrible for it. Like, usually for those, you get, like, these six-figure per-screen averages.
I went to Box Office Mojo to look at the per-screen average of the new indie films, and that had the highest per-screen average of, like, anything in the country.
Oh, I bet.
At 4,500 per screen. And I thought, oh, that's too many people. Like, no.
Well, the very last movie I saw before ensconcing myself in this apartment was First Cow, which I went to see the Thursday night before it opened. And for some reason, the Arclight put it in one of the big houses.
Oh, really?
Like, what would you say those big houses upstairs hold? Like 500 people?
The big houses?
Mm-hmm.
The big Arclight houses?
Yeah, like the one right next to
300.
The one right next to the concession stand upstairs. 300. Okay, fine.
That's what I'm thinking.
All right. Yeah. Who knows? I think that's maybe lowballing.
I don't know the answer. Just guessing.
In any event, they were putting First Cow in one of the biggest houses at a very big LA multiplex, and there were 5 of us in that theater, which was, you know, we were already social distancing. And I went because we were talking about it on Who Shot You this week, and then I didn't even get to go do it because I was not.
If there's a film that I'm most upset about,
no, I know, I wish you could have gone with me.
Not getting to see the Thursday night screening that you went to.
Yeah,
I gave my ticket to one of our friends.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because I felt so sickly, and I didn't. So yeah, I'm stuck. Because I'm not going to a theater right now to see anything. So, you know, hey, I need a First Cow my living room, please.
Yeah. We can catch up. There's a lot of Kelly Reichardt on Criterion right now.
I've seen everything except River of Grass.
Well, we can watch River of Grass.
All right. Well, we will. I will.
We can watch River of Grass. I can finally see Old Joy.
We'll sing them all.
I always want to say Old Boy, and that's not right. Old Joy.
Old Joy.
But I've seen all the other ones, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
You saw Meek's Cut Off?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then yeah, you're roughly up to date.
I even saw the Enviro-Terrorism one that she did. That's very un-her.
My least favorite. No, it's good. It's just sort of like.
No, I just said it's the most un-her of her right. movies.
Yeah.
So First Cow is quite lovely, and I can't wait for you to see it, and listeners, I can't wait for y'all to be able to see it too.
Right.
It is, you know, I think. Definitely going to be talked about it when we talk about the best films of 2020. It stars John Magaro, who is one of those actors that you've seen in stuff and you're not quite sure who he is. And you're thinking that maybe he's like, is it Michael Anganaro? Is that his name?
Michael Angarano.
Angarano. Yeah. Like they've got kind of that same face. But this guy was in The Big Short. He was in Carol. You've seen him in stuff. Anyway, right. He's a very engaging lead here, and he plays a cook who travels with a bunch of I can't remember if they're gold prospectors or what, but like a bunch of dudes making their way through the Pacific Northwest. They get to what resembles a town,
right?
And he decides to stay put for a while, and he befriends this a Chinese guy whose life he saves in the forest, who speaks fluent English, and the two of them wind up in this town, and they discover that a local wealthy Brit played by Toby Jones has brought in the area's first cow because he wants cream with his tea. And so they hatch a scheme.
Who doesn't?
Indeed. Please.
Although recently, I was told recently that.
Were you cream shamed?
Yeah. Because I don't put cream in my tea. I put half and half.
Right.
That is in my morning cup of black tea.
Oh, so you weren't shamed for despoiling your tea. You were shamed for not despoiling it enough?
No.
Okay.
You were sitting right here when it happened. It was a family member who said, half and half in your tea, what are you doing? And I was like, well, let me tell you what I'm doing. First of all, in my tea in the morning, I like some sugar and I like some milkiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put whole milk in my tea before and it's good. Mm-hmm. And I can live with that. But why would you want... Why would you not want more milkiness? Why would you not want more?
That's how I am with my coffee.
Creaminess. And
I
so
could have
half
milk,
and half. And I must describe this for people who are not in the U.S.
Oh, that's true.
Half and half is half milk, half cream.
Yeah,
and it's
splits the difference.
And it's a little thicker than whole milk, and it's not as heavy as actual cream.
Yeah.
But boy, does it make your tea and or coffee super nice.
This has come up so much recently that I thought you were talking about somebody else who was shaming you about this.
Well, people frequently shame me for how I like my coffee and or tea when I have coffee.
Well, your coffee is ridiculous.
I put sugar and half and half in that. About half coffee and half the rest.
Your coffee should basically be a mug of cream and sugar and then an eyedropper of
sure,
coffee.
Whatever.
You're ridiculous.
But when I have my morning tea in the morning, I like a good strong cup of black tea that I've brewed for the amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like that last little chunk to be some half and half and some sugar. Nice and sweet.
Fair enough.
George Orwell would scold me for that.
He would indeed.
Because he never put sugar in his.
Yes.
But he did put milk.
Okay.
And I just want everyone to get away from me, stop talking to me, stop touching me, and never tell me anything more about my tea ever again, because I'm doing it right, the way I want it done.
You want them to get
the
off
the end. Get I off, have spoken.
Get off your milky cloud.
That's right.
I used to put sugar in my coffee, but now I take it black, but with half and half.
Right.
So Toby Jones wants cream in his tea, brings a cow to the territory, and our heroes, Cookie and King Lou, played by John Magaro again, and Orion Lee, hatch a scheme where basically they go at night, they steal milk, and they start making oily cakes to sell to the various, pretty much dudes. It's almost entirely dudes in this territory.
Right.
And very quickly they take off. They, you know, like it is this sort of lesson in supply and demand, like what they sell the first ones on the first batch for versus what they sell the last ones for. It is obviously, and it is not like, you know, I'm the only person who's going to tell you this. It is a metaphor about capitalism.
Well, yeah.
But it is also this lovely...
Meek's Cutoff is about George W. Bush.
Exactly.
Just FYI.
Indeed it is.
Even though it has nothing to do with George W. Bush.
Wendy and Lucy, also a metaphor about capitalism.
Yeah.
But it's also this very lovely story of this friendship between these two guys, and it is...
Cakes and biscuits and teas and all the things that make my life worth living.
Oh, I know, yeah. Christy Lemire, when she saw the movie, she was like, have you guys seen First Cow yet? I said, no. She goes, you guys are going to love it. It's about two guys in a cabin making things with buttermilk. But no, it is like the relationship between the two men, I think it's you know, it is that whole thing of, like, it is non-romantic, but it is very affectionate and intimate.
Right.
That's
old joy.
So I understand.
Same way. Yeah.
So anyway, it has all the craft that Reichardt always brings to these period pieces.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it feels very lived in. It feels very unslick, you know, the even like Toby Jones's house, like there are the parts of it you can tell where they've really put in the effort to like make it all fancy schmancy, but like it's still rough hewn in other ways.
Yeah.
You know, the score is great, and it sort of comes in and out of like diegetic, you know, performance in the film.
Yeah.
And then into the score itself. Lily Gladstone pops up at one point, always exciting.
Listen, if you haven't seen Certain Women, an earlier Kelly Reichardt film, Lily Gladstone delivers just the most heartbreaking performance.
Yeah, it is sublime.
And you don't know her name because she's still quite new and doing, you know, smaller films. But boy, she's just something else.
She won the LA Film Critics Independent or LA Film Critics Best Supporting Actress Award that year.
That year,
she was great in that. So yeah, so she's terrific in this for her, you know, fairly brief appearance. It's great, and I almost really don't want to talk about it too much because I know it's gonna be the first thing you run out and see once we're at a place to run out and see things again.
It'll hit streaming before a movie theater is able to have it, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I'm
predicting nothing.
I'm watching the news.
I make no predictions.
We're in for a while of this, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody buckle up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the movie you saw this week.
Heimat is a space in time.
Tell me everything.
Heimat, H-E-I-M-A-T, is a German word meaning homeland.
Mm.
Okay. This is a German documentary from filmmaker Thomas Heise. He is responsible for a 2002 documentary called Fatherland and many other things. He's been a filmmaker for a very long time. In fact, he was making movies in East Germany before the wall came down and they were, you know, banned and stuff.
Is he part of like the new German cinema movement of the 60s and 70s?
That's a very good question. This is my first opportunity to see any of his films.
I see.
So he's someone I'm going to have to go back and do.
Gotcha.
A little catching up with, and as much as I, you know, am able to find what he's done.
I have a text from a college class I took called The New German Cinema.
I know you do.
Called The New German Cinema.
I know you do. I've seen that book on the shelf many times.
Maybe he's in there.
He might be, and I'll investigate.
Okay.
In any case, this is, I guess, you know, I really don't like to use the word experimental documentary because it's an alarm bell for people, and it makes people think, oh no, too hard or too weird or too whatever.
You could call it a personal documentary.
It is very personal. But I think when people think of documentary,
right,
they tend to think of a very, you know, structured... they think of a film that is structured in a way that they understand.
Sure.
You know, footage of the real thing happening, interviews with people. And so the minute you stray outside of that, the minute your film becomes something other than that, even if it's something as straightforward as a film by Frederick Wiseman,
sure,
people start to get a little... because
not that anyone calls Wiseman's stuff experimental.
Wiseman is by no means experimental, but what he doesn't do,
sure,
is what a lot of documentary filmmakers do.
Yes,
he doesn't have the talking head interviews. He doesn't have
narration.
Music. He doesn't have explanation of any kind.
Non-diegetic music.
You find out what's happening as you watch the film. And then there's a film like this, which is sort of a personal essay. And it is a collection of letters, diaries, memos, occasional recorded conversations, all read by Heise. As what fills the screen is... a lot of images and sounds from quite often contemporary Germany. A lot of landscape, a lot of urban landscape, a lot of shots of, you know, abandoned buildings, things that were once part of the life of the story he's telling you about. For a solid 30 minutes... near the beginning of the film, the only visual on screen is an endless list of names.
Oh boy.
And it's like, you know, old typed lists of the names of Jewish people sent to camps.
Wow.
Now, Heise's family is the subject of this film. From the beginning of the 20th century to now.
Okay.
It begins more or less in the early 1900s, 1912-ish or so, with his grandfather or even great-grandfather having written a school essay about being against war.
And how did his German family spend the 20th century?
Being thrown around by the events of the 20th century.
Oh, okay.
There were Jewish people in his family, and there were over this long list of names are letters, again from you know, older people in his family, who are reading. He's reading these letters, and the letters, the subjects of the letters are, well, now we can't go to these shops, and now we can't do this, and now we can't do that.
Gotcha.
And it's all about, like, the circle getting smaller and trapping them. It's divided up, the film itself is divided up into four or five parts. And each chunk, you know, moves the story chronologically through the century, through World War I, through World War II, through the split of Germany into halves, through the fall of the wall. And how, unfortunately, quite often his family was just sort of torn apart and scattered by events. That is one of the reasons why the documents that he reads, that he narrates, that forms the narration, they are often just fragments. They're pieces. They're things that don't have resolved holes to them. Like you can't always know what happened to people who disappeared. And so one of the things that is never answered in the film is why. When you look at German history in the 20th century, one of the things you think of is, how did this even happen? And why did this happen? And that word is never mentioned. And ultimately, one of the, you know, one of the points of the film is why people are this way to each other. You know, why they keep repeating these historical atrocities over and over is something that you can't really answer. Formally, this film reminded me a little bit of Shoah in that it is, it's a very long film. It's not 9 hours. Shoah is 9 hours long.
It's a brisk three.
Three hours and 38 minutes. And, but it's a very quiet sort of
contemplative,
hypnotic. His narration, his reading of these documents and memos and letters and diaries and stuff, it is not burdened by dramatic recitation. All right.
Gotcha.
And you will see, you know, slowly panning shots of landscapes that often fit in with what he's talking about. Sometimes you're left guessing as to what it is you're seeing and why. So it moves that way. You need to be ready for a quiet, long, thoughtful sit with this guy as he delivers this fragmentary information to you.
Right.
All sorts of literary references and cultural references throughout the letters and diaries and stuff. From And Quiet Flows the Dawn, which is very, you know, very much a sort of analog to, you know, the form this film takes anyway. Him talking trash about Hemingway and Hemingway's nihilism. And he ends it with the way that he ends it with a discussion of not just Germany, but Europe and the United States and all the Western countries are engaged now in a kind of economic war, a class war that is being imposed on poor people by the very rich, by corporations. People with capital will dispose of the people without it when they cease to be useful. So it doesn't necessarily have a happy ending.
Well.
And you don't always know what happened to the people in his family.
Really?
But you... It's riveting. There's you know, like I say, there's a lot of movie here. It's 3 hours and 40 minutes, but you are in it for the duration, and it's worth your time.
Okay.
Now, here's the catch. It's playing at one theater in Los Angeles one time a day. It's playing in New York, apparently, as well. I don't know where or how often each day. You ain't ought to be going out to movie theaters anyway.
Although, if you wanted to go to one with a lot of social distancing, I suspect this might
be you might have a place to yourself if you went to see this one. But eventually, again, it will be streaming.
Yes.
And I think Icarus is involved in it somehow, and they usually wind up streaming their stuff.
Gotcha.
It's great. It's demanding. It requires a certain level of attention and you know, active participation on your part.
Sure.
But it's really, really good.
Okay. Interesting. I don't really have a DVD pick. I think we'll just say go to the Criterion Channel and check out the Kelly Reichardt stuff.
You know, sure.
While you're waiting to be able to see First Cow. Because I know it hasn't opened in a lot of markets yet anyway. So it's not even just that you can't go see it. It's that you can't leave the house to go see it. It's just that it's not showing near you probably.
Right.
But you know, get caught up on Certain Women and Meeks Cut Off and Wendy and Lucy and, you know, her other films are really amazing.
This past week, while on the couch, recuperating, getting well again, TCM did a whole day of ships sinking.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, because the idea of a Dave White sick day is like, well, when is the Poseidon Adventure coming on?
And it was.
And it did. Weirdly enough, they showed Poseidon Adventure and Beyond the Poseidon Adventure, but not back to back. And in fact, they showed Beyond first.
I'll tell you why. Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, they wanted Poseidon in prime time.
Yes.
And they wanted Beyond to be forgotten in the afternoon, so.
Yes. Beyond the Poseidon Adventure is beyond useless. Mm. It is the most
hacky.
It is one of the most hacky, misguided ideas for a sequel. And just has none of anything involved. It has none of anything that made the Poseidon Adventure so great.
Yeah.
You don't care about these people in the Beyond film. They're all mercenaries or criminals. It wrecks the gravity of the first film by telling you, oh no, there's like 30 more people. And here they are. They're all terrible. Like, yes.
And like the lighting is wrong. Like they didn't have the money. There was to no match money or the care. Film yeah, with there the was first nothing. One, so it's all
you could feel no one caring.
Yeah,
and it's just rotten. Like it's not even a fun bad movie.
Yeah,
it's just not the kind of movie you watch and you're like, ho, this sure is stupid.
It just lies there.
It's just inert. It's the worst.
If you could get through the double feature, the Sally Field Michael Caine double feature of Beyond the Poseidon Adventure and Surrender, then you're a stronger person.
I don't even know what Surrender is.
Oh, it was a canon movie they made together with Steve Guttenberg.
Oh, okay. But then the Poseidon Adventure was on.
Yes.
It's fantastic. I watched it again for like, I don't know,
the millionth time.
45th time. And it never fails. It's always there. It's always good. It's always exciting. It's always emotional.
Mm.
It's just great. But that's not even what I'm going to talk about.
Oh.
I watched for the very first time The Unsinkable Molly Brown.
Yeehaw.
What a weird film that is.
It is the Beyond the Poseidon Adventure of MGM musicals, in that it came like sort of after the fact and on a stricter budget.
1964.
Yeah.
Debbie Reynolds.
Yeah.
As Molly Brown, the woman who survived the sinking of the Titanic, the rich American socialite who survived the sinking of the Titanic, and whose story revolving around that incident is so fascinating that the movie decided not to tell you anything about it. Like, nothing. They devote approximately 4 minutes of screen time to the sinking of the Titanic.
Right.
You see this little miniature boat hit this little fake iceberg.
Bloop, 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 bloop.
And then you see Debbie Reynolds in a boat with all these people and, you know, making them, like, cheer up.
Yeah, like stripping off layers so she can wrap women in, like, furs or whatever to keep them going.
Right.
So she's eventually, like, in a nighty, basically. Yeah. But because she's from Colorado,
10 degrees.
She's supposed to not mind, right. You know.
And, but at one point, like, she smacks some woman in the face, and she's like, snap out of it, you know? And she's like, I'm just learning how to live. I'm Molly Brown. I'm unsinkable. And you're like, they wrote those lines for you to say? There is...
We talked about how her husband, played by Harv Presnell, who plays her husband, like, had the worst timing.
Poor dude.
Like, this guy...
That guy should have been a movie star in, like, the 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. Or he could have at least been like Howard Keel if he'd been around in the 50s.
Right.
But by the 60s, the whole enterprise was fading away, even though it was the era of the studios pumping insane amounts of money into musicals to try and chase the Sound of Music Mary Poppins dragon.
Right.
So, but you know, so this guy, his big claim to fame in movies was he's the husband of the Unsinkable Molly Brown, and he sings They Call the Wind Mariah in Paint Your Wagon.
Yeah.
Which does make him, like, the one actual singer in that movie, with the possible exception of Ray Walston, and whoever dubs Gene Seberg.
But his singing style was out of time as well, because, like I said, he should have been around in the 30s when that sort of...
He's a light tenor.
Stentorian, you know, approach was...
Yeah, like operetta, basically. He was Nelson Eddy.
Yeah. And it's just a weird... It's a weird movie for a lot of reasons. The script is hilariously strange and bad. The sets are that lurid Technicolor of the 1960s, where everything is just sort of like the red that hurts.
Eye punishing.
And, but there's one great number And it's when she does belly up to the bar boys with all the mining guys.
Yeah.
And these guys are all like, of course, they're all professional dancers. And, yeah. And you can tell because of all the butts that are
well, they're all wearing dance belts.
Very tight pants and stuff. And that's joyful to look at. Like, no, I'm not talking that the butts are joyful to look at.
The number.
They ain't bad. Mm-hmm. The number is exciting. And,
yes.
And you can feel like people thinking, oh, we're going to build the whole, this, all we have to have is this.
Right. It'll be our barn raising scene from Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Right. You know? And then nothing else matters.
Right. What was that other lifeboat movie you watched where they kept making people swim alongside of it and they were rationing all the water? That looked really
intense.
It was
a British film and I forget what it was called.
That was,
I was dozing off. I was sleeping through most of it.
I mean, I was at the table working and just kind of half paying attention, but it was like, they were just constantly throwing people overboard.
It's a black and white British film, and I'll have to go look up the name of it, and we can talk about it some other time, I guess. But it's based on a true story where a ship sank, and there were like 25 people for a lifeboat, and they had to throw people overboard to make it not sink.
Yeah.
So they could save some, but not everyone.
And then it ends with you find out that the real life captain faced a murder charge, and he had like a light sentence based on the extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah.
And they literally end the movie with like, how would you judge
him? Yeah, very strange. also very strange. Anyway, I'm not saying you should watch The Unsinkable Molly Brown, but if you feel like you need to understand the complete history of American musicals, particularly MGM, because that was one of the last.
It was one of the last
big
really
MGM
the
musicals.
Last big MGM musical. Yeah,
it's worth looking at for that.
Yeah, it is of historical significance in that sense. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an odd little film. We have some five star reviews, which if you leave us a five star review on the Apple Podcast, we will happily read those, and we have three today.
Why don't you pause this recording so that I can go hunt them down?
Oh, brother. During the break, I looked it up. The movie is called Abandoned Ship from 1957. I'd never heard of it before.
It was also released in the UK as Seven Waves Away, which is its original title.
Okay, then.
They called it Abandoned Ship. And also 7 days from now for U.S. releases.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, I didn't watch the whole thing because I was in and out of consciousness.
Yeah. But like it's one of the, you know, much like the Hitchcock film, it's set almost entirely in a lifeboat.
Well, the lifeboat is based on the same story.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I went and did a little Wikipedia. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Reviews,
and I
please.
Assume that's correct information. I don't know.
Well, must be true. On the internet.
Okay, five-star reviews. This is from Moon Age Daydream, 35. These men are my favorite.
You.
I've been listening to this podcast for a little over a year, and it's by far the most heartwarming part of my week. Listening to film critics as experienced and eloquent.
Ooh.
Now, that ain't wrong.
We got vocabulary.
I'm real eloquent. As experienced and eloquent as these two is simply delightful. Many folks have expressed this sentiment already. But to reiterate, Alonso and Dave feel like the kind of friends you've always wanted. Oh, you don't really know if you want me as a friend.
Yeah, trust me. It's...
I was a patron for a while, but sadly had to pause my subscription due to some rather large medical bills. But if you can afford it, the other podcasts Alonso and Dave produce are beyond worth it. Of those, I recommend Linoleum Nights the most. Their banter on all things from pop culture to politics is pure gold, though all of them are great. I listened to Linoleum Knife and Fork while I cooked, and LKTV after catching up on The Circle. Point being, you will not regret listening and or joining their club. It will make your week infinitely better. Thank you, Moon Age Daydream 35.
Thank you. I hope you
Hey, Moon Age Daydream 35, while you were a patron, did you make sure to get all the stuff you were entitled to? Did you get your stuff? If you didn't get your stuff, you need to email me, dlelandwhite1964@gmail.com, because now that you're gone, I want to make sure that you got all the things you were entitled
indeed.
To.
We hope you're feeling better and that your finances are working themselves out as well. And hey, since Moon Age Daydream 35 mentioned it, we do have a Patreon at
Patreon.com. And this person just did the advertising for us.
Well, but not, didn't say where it was, did they?
All right, okay.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. All right. Yeah, lots of extra shows, lots of extra goodies. Do check it out. We have a lot of things in the hopper for a while. We're both trapped in this apartment, yep. I promise.
This is from The Tragic Anders, my favorite film podcast.
That's from iTunes UK.
Favorite.
Yes.
I've just decided something. That people in Canada and the UK just spell everything the right way and we're doing it wrong.
They would agree with you.
I know. But I'm just gonna, you know what? We can give this to them.
All right.
As a treat.
Suck up.
Yeah. But I'm still going to say it. Favorite.
But the labour.
And the couleur. David Alonso with the perfect hosts for what is my favorite film podcast. Knowledgeable, passionate, funny, and never in too much of a hurry. That's true.
Word.
These guys know their stuff, but at no point try to exclude listeners.
Oh, well, thanks.
Unless you voted for Trump, then you can just get out of here. I'm not even kidding. Library B says, I've been avidly listening to David Alonso for a couple of years now. I'm always thrilled when a new episode's been posted, whether they are thoughtfully discussing the latest movies, big and small, or chatting about delicious recipes. I'm always engaged. Linoleum Knife is a big, comfy podcast that is a tonic for dreary Monday mornings.
Well,
no,
thank you.
No recipe today.
No.
Because we're just heating up frozen chili that you made in January.
Yes.
And I've got a leftover box of Jiffy corn muffin mix that I'm going to make so that we can have it with the chili.
Yum. Well, that's going to be great.
That's it.
That'll be awesome.
I mean, that's... Look, hooray, that's Sunday dinner. Ain't nobody coming over for Sunday
dinner.
Look,
everybody can be jealous.
There's not going to be any Sunday dinner for who knows how long.
I know,
for
the time being. Everybody be jealous because I am self-quarantined with the King of Pancakes. So,
I did make you some pancakes this morning. They were fine.
They were fine.
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody who left a 5-star review. And again, if you leave us one on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the show. And
don't leave a 4 and expect to get it read.
No.
That's not happening.
5 and 5 alone.
Only 5.
Reviews do help in the grand scheme of things, so we appreciate all the anything you can do to bring people's ears to the program. Talk about us on, you know, the social media, whatever it is. You're awesome.
Here's a little note from Daniel. Dave White has convinced me that I will never watch a hostile movie. I do not want to see Heather Matarazzo horribly, painfully slaughtered. I really don't want to see anyone slaughtered, but especially not Heather Matarazzo. Okay, Daniel, let me try to convince you one more time.
Oh, God.
Watching people get slaughtered in horror movies is a balm for the soul. Ugh. It's a comfort in trying times. Sometimes it's hilarious and sometimes it's disgusting, but it's always a treat. And it is especially a treat when a good actor is being horribly slaughtered because they're giving a performance while they're being horribly slaughtered. Heather Matarazzo is so good at being horribly slaughtered in Hostel 2 that I will never stop talking about it and how dynamic a presence she is while being hung upside down and chopped to pieces with a machete.
Daniel, that is a totally...
By a lesbian who's bathing in her blood.
It is totally valid.
Which is what happens.
It is totally valid not to want to see this. I have your back on it. Don't let him pressure you. Some people don't want to see that, Dave. I'm sorry.
Okay, sure, fine.
Live with it.
But she's so good at it.
I have no doubt.
She's really good at it.
She is committed. That Heather Matarazzo. But I don't want to see that either.
Kat says, hearing Dave venerate the silence in Portrait of a Lady on Fire had me yelling at my podcatcher. How have you not watched Lady Macbeth yet? Because it got away from me.
No.
But you know what?
We got time.
I got plenty of time coming up.
And you know, we need to get caught up on our Florence Pugh. So, yes, that's on the list for sure.
Theo. Wait. Okay, yes.
Yes.
I discovered this podcast via the now defunct What the Flick YouTube channel. I watch Breakfast All Day, for the record.
Oh, thank you.
I've been an avid listener ever since, enjoying the in-depth critiques, playful banter, and should be a trailer voice. That is Dave White's voice. My sister is also a big movie fan and was quite annoyed at this year's Oscar nominations. We came up with this list as some of our favorite 2019 movies, which I am offering for you to knife. Not that I really understand what that means, even after listening all this time. Well, here's what it means. We're going to read your list of films that you like, and we're going to tell you if they're good or not. If they're bad, you don't get the points. At the end, we add up the points. We decide what percentage knife you are. Not your films, you. You will carry this badge proudly or in shame. All right, here we go. I've included our thoughts with each movie, but feel no obligation to read them. Ooh, there's a lot of thoughts. Maybe I'll read some of them.
Okay.
This was copied over from a thing we did for Instagram, so our names are indicated at the bottom of each movie to show who the writer is. Okay. Oh, it's Sarah and Theo.
Yes.
All right. Okay. The Heiresses, which I have not seen.
I have not heard good things.
I don't remember ever seeing a film from Paraguay before, so that alone intrigued us. Not only was the country unfamiliar, I can't remember seeing a main character like Chela, an older woman in a codependent lesbian relationship. The entire movie felt like a peek into a world entirely different from my own, populated mainly by older women, and brought to life with subdued lighting style and intimate shots. We saw this movie at the beginning of the year, and it's stayed one of our favorites to the end. I know about this film, I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet. Things. The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which is lovely.
Yep.
The Farewell, which is also wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
The Lighthouse, which is fantastic.
I heard a great thing on Twitter recently, which is Portrait of a Lady on Fire is what happens when you leave women alone on an island.
Yeah.
And The Lighthouse is what happens when you leave men alone on
an island. The Lighthouse is what happens when you leave men alone on an island and they choose against all their judgment not to make out.
Well, there's that.
They could have had nice baths together and been clean and nice for each other instead of just getting grotier and grotier over the course of the film.
Yes.
And then like fighting and beating each other to a pulp.
Mm-hmm.
They could have been having sweet, slow lovemaking.
Yeah, like, instead of like the grimy masturbating they do in that movie. By the way, The Heiresses is streaming on Amazon for 99 cents for rental.
Oh, 99 cents.
99
That's
cents.
That's a bargain.
It is a steal.
Theo says, never have I enjoyed a movie with so many farts. The Souvenir. Here's what they say about it. We both struggled with hearing the dialogue for this one. That's true. Everyone in The Souvenir is like, whisper. And I was totally lost at the beginning, yet it has stuck with me for the rest of the year. Though I never experienced the kind of destructive relationship depicted in this film, the aching vulnerability and awkwardness of being a woman in her early 20s is very familiar. The storytelling is at times confusing, a deliberate effect that mirrors the feelings of being in that kind of relationship. Also, I appreciate any film where Tilda Swinton plays a mom, to her own real-life daughter, in fact, and the title references a Fragonard painting.
Well, Tilda Swinton is a mom. Check out Derek Jarman's Edward II.
True. However, Tilda Swinton as a mom in The Souvenir is Tilda Swinton in really impeccable mom outfits.
This is true.
Like classy old money mom outfits.
I am not a fan of The Souvenir, but enough people I trust like it enough that I just sort of throw my hands in the air, so I'm not going to take away points for that one.
Photograph. Not The Photograph.
Oh?
Photograph is the only movie I saw twice in the theater last year. We have not seen this film.
Which one is it?
I'm going to read you the comment.
Please do.
This movie shows a slowly developing relationship between a poor street photographer and a shy upper-class woman amidst the massive city of Mumbai.
The fake... Oh, this one. Yes, yes, yes. I remember.
The fake fiancé premise feels modern rom-com, but the execution feels like updated Jane Austen. With furtive looks clandestine meetings, and rare physical touch. The movie has things to say about class, love, and soda, and never feels heavy. I truly love it.
Okay, because I read several not great reviews, and I didn't love The Lunchbox, which I believe is the same guy. So, okay, interesting.
Long Day's Journey Into Night, the Chinese film that has the second half in 3D.
Which I have not seen.
Honeyland.
Yes.
And right. One Cut of the Dead.
Which everybody says we need to see.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
We might, you know what, this might be the good time to get the 7-day free Shudder thing.
Okay.
Because they got Mask of the Red Death, which I don't know, feels a little relevant right now. Uh-huh. They've got that documentary about the history of black artists in horror films that everybody said was great.
Okay.
And they're currently doing one about queer artists, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
One Cut of the Dead, here's what they say. A group of indie movie makers in Japan attempt to film a horror movie in an old dilapidated factory, but quickly get interrupted by the supernatural. Genre filmmaking is often ignored by the awards community or is dismissed as lowbrow. This movie illustrates the kind of passion that goes into any filmmaking, even the low-budget kind. If you sit with this movie, watch it all the way to the end, you will discover that it has something inspiring to leave you with. Well.
Yeah, no, people like Kurt Holman, among others, has been like, you really, really need to see this.
Sarah, Theo, this list is 100% knife because when we haven't seen a movie, you get the benefit of the doubt.
We do.
And Alonzo didn't like The Souvenir, but he admits that he's wrong. So you're 100%
knife. No. I just know that it's one of those dog whistles that I don't hear.
That's the same as admitting you're wrong.
No, because when I can hear it, then I'll know. But I can't, and so I'm just like, not having it.
Same thing.
No. You keep fighting me. I'm going to take away 5%. Just shush.
Okay.
Right. Is that it? Are we good?
We're always good, and that's it.
All right. Well, look, friends, you've got more time on your hands, possibly.
We hope you have more time. Like, I feel...
We're not going to assume that you are not having to venture out into the world to do things.
Because it makes me afraid.
Anyway, so if you have time to fill and you want to do it with fun, free stuff, check out the other podcasts that I always tell you about at the end of the episode.
Right.
Go listen to what Bibbs and Whitney are up to with the Critically Acclaimed Network and what the folks at Schmoes Know are doing. Anyone with Dennis Hensley. The Comics Canon, The Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, The Big Fat Gay Podcast, The Hallmarkies Podcast. Check me out this week on...
Fruit Bowl. Sure. It's queer and it's dirty.
Yes.
It's about sex.
NSFW.
S-E-X.
Check out Let's Go Otsuko, a Japanese game show. I'm on that podcast this week with the brilliant Anita Sarkeesian, which was a lot of fun. The Criterion Cast, Fat Guys at the Movies, and Secretly Timid.
Where can people find you on social media, a husband of mine named Alonzo Duralde?
Well, I am the only Alonzo Duralde on earth, so I'm real easy to find on Facebook and on Twitter. I'm at A Duralde, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E.
What are you on Instagram?
I'm at LinoleumCast. Yeah. And you can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at LinoleumCast, the accounts for this show.
Right.
Where's your account on Twitter, Dave?
I'm D. Leland White. My middle name is Leland.
Mm-hmm.
Such a handsome middle name.
It is. Forthright.
L-E-L-A-N-D.
Yes.
D. Leland White. That's me on Twitter. That's also me on Instagram. And you don't need to be following me on Facebook because I'm almost never there.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
By the way, our friends at Deck the Hallmark have a whole network now, the Bramble Jam Network. And they have a lot of fun shows. My Year with Dolly is Justin Kirkland going through 50 years of Dolly Parton's career, 1 year per episode, which is super entertaining. They've got History or His Story, where former history teacher and history buff Dan reads three stories about a certain segment of history, and you have to guess which one is the fake one, and I will be appearing on that show soon in a pre-taped episode. And they have a new one called Yo Gavel Gavel, where Dan and Bran tell each other about daytime courtroom shows and try and guess what the verdicts were. All worth checking out. Again, yeah, at Linoleum Cast, you can follow us. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here for us. We appreciate it. We're back. We're here for the duration. And
I would like to tell Patreon people who are already subscribed, mm-hmm. Patreon. We recorded a longer version of LKTV yesterday to mm-hmm. sort of try to make up for lost time.
Yes.
Tomorrow and Tuesday, we will be doing Linoleum Nights mm-hmm. and also Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one is going to happen which. I'm thinking that tomorrow, Monday, is going to be Fork.
Okay.
And then Tuesday, I want us to do a live Nights.
Okay.
For anyone who just happens to be home and wants to watch us do it.
Sure.
Because that's how we do that. Usually we do Linoleum Nights on Sunday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And
but now all
and we do it live on a Facebook, you know, live video.
Yeah.
Then it goes to audio over on Patreon. And then we'll be doing a couple of Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knives
mm-hmm.
this week because we watched some things. We're going to talk about them.
And I've also been reposting.
We watched The Day of the Dolphin.
We sure did.
One of my favorite movies of 1973 when I was 9 years old.
Wow, and your taste was so refined.
My taste was pretty good when I was 9 years old.
Well, we'll talk about
it. And Day of the Dolphin is still a delightful, weird
movie. About that, too.
Unwittingly, he trained a dolphin to assassinate the President of the United States.
Yes. Written by the late Buck Henry.
Yes.
And then I'm also going back and reposting our old full-length Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes. And I'm going alphabetically, so I started with the Apple and the Avengers, but we're going to work our way through
What's next?
I don't remember. But yeah, there's something like 15 or 20 of them. So
right.
And I'm doing all the numbers, you know, as though they were letters. So like, you know,
what?
39 steps and 2 days, one night, those are all going to be in the T's.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, again, thank you for listening. Be well. Take care of each other. Stay home. Wash your hands. Do all the stuff that the CDC and the WHO are telling you to do.
If you don't have to go out somewhere, don't go out somewhere. Yeah.
Just
please
knock it off. But yeah, again, if your job is forcing you to be out there in the world, you know, stay safe. Your efforts are appreciated and be well. We'll catch you next time. Until then.
Goodbye.